Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sully, and once again, having another cult B-movie themed interview. We got Athena Demos. She's been in numerous independent movies and TV show appearances, including Tales of Marusa, Skeletons in the Desert, and Sugar Box. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So this was just really cool because it's always fun doing these kinds of interviews, just talking with people who are have been just nonstop busy, done all kinds of installments in the ever-changing industry, all kinds of, you know, anything from TV reenactment, documentaries to, you know, just video games and other intriguing pet projects. So I'm just glad to talk to someone who's just, again, been around here since DVD and videotapes were first a thing, and then immigrating into other kinds of alternative acting, modeling, and then independent movies. You've done web series, and I like how that's always changing. Like, there are always ways to come out with a new site, a new content, a new narrative and gimmick. Keeps you going.
Storytelling. I love being part of that storytelling. You know, since the dawn of man, we have been, ever since we had language and even before, we've been sitting around the fire telling stories, entertaining people, and I love storytelling. At the core of my being, I'm a muse. I just fuels my soul to be part of the creative process and to help artists realize their visions. And right, that's what I enjoy doing. So those two things come together and have fueled my acting career. And now I do virtual reality. I'm a virtual reality producer. So it's fueling that career as well. And I just love it. I love working with creatives.
Oh, very nice. Just backtracking there. Who was your acting mentor? If any.
Oh, you know, I don't know that I actually had an acting mentor. I never like studied a specific actor or actress. I love, there's certain actors I love watching. I love watching Tilda Swinton. I love watching Meryl Streep. I love watching. Yeah. I love watching Jim Carrey. He's just got so much range on his face. And I'm a very expressive person, but I can't like contort my face like he does. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam Rockwell is a pleasure to watch. But there's like a plethora of actors when I see they're in a movie. I don't actually care what the movie is about. I know I'm going to enjoy it because the quality of the characterization that person is going to portray on the screen is going to be enjoyable. And they choose really good scripts that will bring out the best in them, or they'll want to be with directors that will bring out the best in them. So, you know, I enjoy watching those actors, but I don't necessarily like, I don't see them as like a mentor. And I often think as mentors is people we have access to. Mm-hmm. And I've never had access to an actor that I would consider a mentor, somebody that I can ask questions of, that can help me reach the next level of my acting. I've never really I had that. I've had some great acting coaches, but nobody that would really put in the mentor category. And I've had people I love working with. Like, okay, Mary Warrenoff, she was a pleasure to work with. I loved working with her and hearing her stories, and being on the set with her, and just having fun. We had so much fun together.
Which film was that again?
That was The Halfway House.
Oh, okay. Shoot. Yes.
Yeah, that was The Halfway House. She was the evil, she played a nun, but she was really like a high priestess that was serving up the girls to a big one-eyed demon, and but I won't give away the movie. But anyway, so that's she was that character, and it was so much fun. And yes, low budget horror is close to my heart.
Totally. What kind of projects do you kind of look for now, especially when you're messing around with virtual reality and just all other sorts of just alternate ways to make something. Like now people can pick up their phones and make it look professional. They don't have to worry.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we do with immersive storytelling is, I mean, it could be a horror film, but what we create is more venues for human connection. So the first project we did is called BRCVR, which stands for Black Rock City Virtual Reality. And it was a virtual Burning Man event to be present for the cancellation of the 2020 and the 2021 events due to COVID. So we created a foundational place for burners to get together, create and share their art virtually because we couldn't get together physically. And we won a ton of awards. I won the Producers Guild Innovation Award. So now I'm a member of the Producers Guild. And from that, we had lots of companies come to us and ask us to build projects for them. Societal impact projects like Breonna's Garden, which is about Breonna Taylor, the young woman who was murdered in Kentucky by police.
Oh, my. Yes.
And we created a Pride World, which allowed people from the LGBTQAI plus community to come together and share their stories, and had some really good music and dancing. And we had a museum that's a whole history of the Pride movement in 1969, Stonewall Inn and Christopher Park, and modeling all that out. So lots of times when we talk about storytelling, we talk about linear storytelling, where you sit down and you watch a screen and there's a story that unfolds from beginning to end. And what you see is a script realized into pictures by actors and set designers and art directors and like all these people. So all those people are still, for the most part, involved. It is a smaller crew. And what we do is bring audiences in and make them participants. So now you're participating in the story. You are learning the story. You are part of the story. And it makes it more engaging and compelling. And you can do it with your friends. So now instead of passively watching on a 2D screen, the story unfolds in the world around you, making you part of that story, whether it be Burning Man, Pride, Breonna's Garden. We did a project for the European Cricket Network called Cricket First, which has a Hall of Fame. And I didn't know anything about cricket when we did it. I learned so much. It was great. I loved it. And now we're embarking on our biggest project, which is something called Story Spheres, which is making a platform for immersive storytellers. So like I told you at the beginning, I'm a muse and I like to be in service of the artists. Right. Well, we are building something because what we realized, my business partner, Doug Jacobson, he's a world-class filmmaker and editor, and we're both storytellers. We both come from Hollywood. We're like, God, the tools for immersive storytelling really aren't there. I mean, you can shoot in 360 and edit it together and have basically a 360 passive experience linear story.
You don't have to be worried, about rejection or anything. You can find 5 different alternate markets instead of go to 10 different meetings to be rejected for your concept or idea.
So what we're doing is building out a format for storytelling. This is a whole new format for movie making, for television making, for documentary making, where you can model out a full 3-dimensional world and put in orbs, spheres of your story at the different places along the locations that your story is going to happen in. And as people together as a group go in to explore these orbs, they get a sense of scale. They get a sense that they're there and they're in it and they're participating. You can have clues or quests or treasures or things that you have to do in order for it to unfold in front of you. And because it's a shared experience with your friends, now you're going to remember it in a completely different way. It's going to be this engaged memory that will last a lifetime. And instead of watching the experience once, you're more likely to go in again and again and again and again. And so for the filmmaker, you get a lot of repeat content. And you're not limited to the 90-minute, 2-hour attention span of watching a movie from beginning to end. You could have 15 hours of content in your story that people just explore, which makes them come back. And if they explore things in different orders, then the story completely changes. And if they do it linearly, because you have the bubbles open up linearly, then they have to come back to get the rest and the rest and the rest and the rest. So it's kind of like binge watching a television show, only you're in it. You're in VR goggles and you are a part of that television show.
And this is very intriguing also, because it's like kind of the anti-video game. Like, it's not about even necessarily beating an objective or doing only just like a party game. You're also just, you want to, beyond just a role playing, you are also encouraging like the different navigations and outcomes.
Yeah. And we're also encouraging human connection.
Yes.
We spent so much time passively watching content. And I think the next generation or the next move for content creators is that participatory content. I mean, honestly, we won't have the metaverse unless we have participatory experiences. We've had user experiences. We've had multi-user experiences, then we got multiplayer experiences, and now we're moving to multi-participatory experiences.
Totally. And with all these just lovely outcomes and just seeing people actually realize that they've successfully made a connection, which one was probably the most notable of all those different encounters? If you had to sum up like just a few.
Of my encounters with the low budget films I did?
Oh, no. Sorry. Just seeing people actually make contact through this virtual.
Oh my gosh. We have done some amazing experiences. One of my favorite, you know, most people think about you go into VR to have a good time.
Yeah.
And nobody thinks that it's a really good source for healing, or for building empathy, or for finding someone to connect with so that you can grieve. And yet all of that exists. So in 2020, and of course we were dealing with COVID and a lot of people had died or gotten sick or people had lost family members. A good friend of mine had lost his daughter. She was 19. And every year at Burning Man, we have a temple. And the temple is a place to leave that which you need to and release into the world. It's a place to memorialize. And we didn't have it because we didn't have Burning Man, because it wasn't going to happen because COVID shut everything down. So it was very important to us to have certain milestones, certain rituals in the virtual space. And one of them was the temple. And because you don't have physics in virtual reality, you could build whatever you want. So it was the temple, but the artist took the temple and flipped it upside down and then created this crazy world of tiny little dots and spheres floating in space. And each one was attached to a tribute, and people could go to a website and leave a tribute and it would get attached to these orbs. So you had everyone's emotions and feelings floating around you. It's a very magical place. And I went in there with my friend. And he wanted to try to find his tribute, because you could leave him anonymously or not anonymously. And he left his public. And he went there to go find it. And so I went there with him to be supportive. And we were scrolling through. We were trying to find it. And he finally found it. And the minute he found it, it disappeared. And he was like, no, I wanted to read it out loud in here. And it was like, a fleeting moment. And he broke down and started crying. And I couldn't touch him. I was in Mexico. He was in Los Angeles. But we were together in the virtual space. And gotcha. So I put my hands out next to his. And we put our hands together. But we couldn't feel each other. Aww. But we could. We had like this energetic exchange. And we were able to hold space for each other. And I just let him cry. And it was such a heart-wrenching and heartbreaking cry to lose a child.
Oh, man.
And afterwards, he said that it filled the gap of not having the temple. It allowed him to grieve and release. And when that temple, and what they ultimately did, because you can't burn a hard drive,
No.
Is that they dismantled the hard drive and then put it back together as a piece of art. And that release of it gave him what he needed in that moment to grieve her. So a lot of people talk about, we're going to have fun. We're going to go to escape room. We're going to do this. We're going to go play a game. But there's a lot of other moments that we have of human connection that can exist in virtual spaces that fulfill us and give us what we need beyond just the fun. Yes, it's fun. I love it. I have a great time. I exercise in VR. I meditate in VR. But there's a lot of these other moments. And I think the versatility of this technology, we really want to utilize it. And that is why we're concentrating on storytelling, on immersive storytelling. But there's super important stories that need to be told and are almost better to be told this way. So that was a very important moment. And then the other one that I loved was, in order to change the time of day, we had to flip the template, flip the skybox. There was no way to actually have a clock attached to it. And we're still not there technology-wise. We're getting there. So I would go in at 6 o'clock in the morning and I would flip the template to dawn from night. And then noon would be day. And then we would do sunset and then we would do night. So I'd go in at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, the people that were awake when I was there at 6 o'clock in the morning were China and Korea and Australia and like that whole part of the world.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
And one of my favorite things to do was to grab a couple flight sticks and fly around the playa in all the art, to see all the art, just fly around Burning Man. So after like day two or day three, I started seeing like there was a lot of people and activity on the platform really early in the morning. So I started introducing myself to people and meeting people from all these different places in the world, people I would never have access to. They're not going to come to the United States. I'm not going to meet them, but I could meet them in this space. It was amazing to meet all these people.
And it's some the of them only way become... to break through.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It made it accessible. You know, these people aren't going to come to Burning Man. They're getting the visas and then the expense and getting there and the travel and the carbon footprint and the financial footprint. So I was able to make friends with all these people, and we would all go flying together. I would call something out. Let's go to the man. And then, poof, we'd all go off, you know, slalom the spires, and off we go, and we go to the top of the man, and we shoot off fireworks. Because we kept fireworks at the head of the man. You can't even get up there, ever. And then we were, like, up in the head of the man. And then I would say, oh, there's that art car over there that looks like a shoe. Like, okay. And everybody flies around and does whatever they want to do. We all meet up at the shoe. And we follow each other around. So much fun. Yeah. It was incredible. But it was human connection. It was fun and it was play. But we were learning to connect with each other from all different walks of life. And some of them had VR headsets and some of them were just on their computer. So while people were locked away in their apartments during COVID, not socializing, I was the most social I have ever been.
And who could have predicted the visceralness of this all, you know?
So visceral.
So emotional.
It was amazing. I loved it. I spent a lot of time crying and laughing. And crying in a VR headset's not all that easy. And laughing really hard in a VR headset is also not all that easy. You know, you change your face and you're like, ah! And it moves. And then you're like, oh, hold on, I can't see. Everything's blurry. But they're getting lighter and smaller every year. So we'll get to the place where it's just like a pair of sunglasses.
Let's hope. Do you feel like it's getting easier to market this kind of experimental material?
Yeah. It's getting a lot easier.
Open to it.
It's a lot easier. People are a lot more accepting of it. Schools and teachers have realized that this is a indispensable tool.
There's less gatekeeping or, well, I didn't come up with it, so I won't.
Yeah, exactly. All the kids are, I mean, I am ADD because of social media. Everyone is highly distracted.
We all are.
If you put on a headset, there's no distraction. You're there. And then if you're in the classroom and the teacher's like, let's go to Rome, click. You're in ancient Rome. And they go, let's see what it looks like now, click. Skybox changes and now you're like there as it is today. You right? couldn't do that even if you flew to Rome.
Even if you wanted to, yeah. It's
even if you wanted to. So the what you're capable of doing, you know, walking inside of an atom to learn about it. You can't, that just doesn't exist, but it exists in VR. You can learn physics. You can learn physics in a place that has no physics. You can learn chemistry and biology and about culture and about ancient cultures and modern cultures and the differences between them and how we evolved as society. And I think that these virtual spaces now give us an opportunity for the next level of evolution. Now we get to evolve from society to humanity. We can use these virtual spaces to practice being kind, being empathetic. It helps grow empathy. It helps us learn about the climate and ourselves and everything going on in the world around us so that we have a better
understanding. Oh, shoot. It just froze.
Is it better now?
Yes, it's better now. Sorry.
Okay, it's probably just a glitch in the matrix.
Yeah.
So,
okay. No, I see you now.
Okay. Okay, great. So we have this wonderful opportunity to create a set of standards, like the principles of Burning Man, for the metaverse as we build it from this point, as a strong foundational fabric for creative collaboration to thrive on. That creative collaboration teaches us how to work together, to have communal effort, to build things larger than we can build ourselves and bring people in from all walks of life so that we can create this magical place that we keep calling the metaverse but doesn't exist yet. And that evolution is actually a choice. All the stages of evolution up until this point have been not our choice.
No.
This one is our choice. And we can now become mankind.
And it's like it's opening up exploration more naturally than you would if you were to just go with your, I don't know, family to a zoo and see what interests you versus what doesn't. And here you're kind of exploring, foreshadowing what you could eventually get interested in. It's almost like a teaching advisor, minus actually having to go and talk to an advisor who may or may not know what you want to do with your career.
Yeah. And it's so accessible. It's so easy and so accessible and accessible to people who, you know, have mobility issues and stuff like that, but also just accessible from a financial standpoint. All you need is a computer. Mm-hmm. Everyone in this industry is all working on trying to make this accessible on your cell phone. I do not like VR on the cell phone. However, everyone has one of these. And not everyone, you know, has
no one can see it right now, but yeah, no, that's, oh, wow.
You know, VR headset. Everybody has a phone, but not everybody has a headset. So we're working on making
different options for different crowds.
Yeah, exactly. And then for people that are neurodivergent, who deal with social anxiety, being behind an avatar gives you the freedom to not have to make eye contact, to feel safe in your own room. You are alone in your bubble, in your safe space, and yet you can still connect with people. And so now you're learning how to socialize. And so
better
it's giving
you
those
might
skills.
From anyone else who might put you on the spot or make you lock up even more, you instead get invited to be more open with everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I see all sorts of positives. Yes, there are trolls. Yes, there are assholes. But you know what? They exist in the physical world.
Yeah.
The one thing you don't have to worry about in VR, I can't believe I'm going to say this, is somebody walking into a school and shooting it up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, yeah. First-person shooter game, sure. But no one's going to die from it. No one's actually going to die from it.
Well, and
I mean, I've been called horrible names and I've had people do things to my avatar that I wasn't happy about.
Oh, dear.
But me, physically, I was fine.
Yeah.
And if I didn't want to deal with them, I can just mute them or I can take off my headset.
Yeah. Hopefully there's a way they can lock some of the trolls out from annoying that many people.
We lock them out. They set up a new account. They come back in. You know, it's just, it's education. I think ultimately they want to be included. And their only skill set for getting the attention is irritating people.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're doing. But if we let them know that they're welcome, that we want them to be a part of it, then maybe they'll back off and they'll be included and supportive member of our virtual society and then our physical society.
Mm-hmm. Altogether, I mean, so for this to go beyond, again, motion capture and all kinds of just beyond just video games, and make an interactive experience. Have you been to any kind of fun conventions or other panels? I mean, I know you were part of a Battlestar Galactica pilot that didn't get picked up, that was helmed by, it was kind of fan film or fan made fiction before that was a thing. And to see just all these different actors kind of doing fun, kind of originating the whole sizzle reel, how to market something. And even if it doesn't get picked up, it broke the internet before that was a thing.
Well, and it was more than just fan created, because Richard Hatch is the one that pushed that through. And he was in the original show and he had written books that continued the storyline. And he really wanted to show Universal that the continuation of that storyline could be a continuation of the show. And they decided to go back and rewrite the original. So the new storyline didn't continue. And I was part of the new storyline. So I didn't end up continuing in the new show. And then they shot it in Canada. And there's all these like rules about how many Americans you're allowed to use in the budget. And so it ended up not working out for me. But yeah, that was a Richard Hatch project. And it was wonderful to work on. And Jay Wolfel was the director. And it was great working with him. It was a great team. And I, and actually the stunt coordinator, trying to remember what his name is. I had worked with him on another film. Oh, it's escaping me. Anyway, he was, because I did a lot of, because I was a Viper pilot and yes. I had some fight scenes. So I had a fair amount of stunt work that I had to do. And I love doing stunt work. So that was really cool. Is his name Johnny?
Johnny Young. Alan Woodman.
It was Alan Woodman.
And TJ Allen. Or TJ White.
TJ. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. TJ. Yeah. So that was really cool working on that. And yeah, that was sort of the first time anybody had really taken a show and done something else with it and broke that open. And now a lot of people do it.
That's sweet. And given the amount of cool kind of like reality TV reenactments and various just other kind of just I wouldn't say you've done as much meta movies, but you've done films that are kind of just like atypical from anything you've seen, from just even just made for TV or the festival scene. You're all about just kind of trying out an unusual formula and you're just very fearless.
Yeah, I want to push every possible, I'm still doing it now. I want to push every possible boundary. I don't want to ever get cookie cuttered. I want those interesting projects that make people think, that can put themselves inside the characters and assess themselves differently. And I've always done projects like that. When I read a script, you know, not my my projects aren't Oscar winners, and they're not trying to be, and they haven't always been the greatest quality of visual effects, you know, but they have always been interesting storylines, unique. I've been killed 13 times in 12 different movies, and each one is completely different than the other. I even died twice in one film, and both of those were completely different. So I'm always looking for innovation. I actually just did a film completely different than any of the others that I did called, oh my God, my brain just escaped me.
All together, I mean.
I can't remember. That's so funny. But now I want to go to IMDb and like find it. It's so funny.
We'll find it. But altogether, I mean, it seems like that level of thinking seems to be kind of gone half the time. Like people are snobby. We want to be this or that. And it's like, why be greedy for fame? Why not just make a living first and then decide where you want to go?
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Just sad.
Okay. Oh my God. I totally forgot about this one. I did Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. That was hilarious. That was so much fun. I had such a good time with that. And I was snake bite. And all of us all thought that he was going to keep it going. Josh Wheaton, it going. But he just did the one. Elephant in the Room was also great. And I played a clergy. And I got to talk to people that were in hospice care. And that was a very moving, and family members who were dealing with people that were in hospice care. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't able to see this one. I couldn't find a place to watch it, but I was glad to know you had done some independent films that were very insightful on medical care.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's called The Brink Of. So I just did one. It's making the film festival circuit right now. And it's called The Brink Of. And I play the mother of a young girl who's getting ready to go to Berkeley. But now she decides she's not going to go. She's going to give up her scholarship and she's going to hit the road and try to make it as a singing star. And of course, you can only imagine mom wasn't too pleased about that idea. So I got to play that role and be that role. And it was fantastic. I loved working with that cast and the director, and I'm looking forward to it finally making it into the public's views when it finishes its film festival tour.
Oh, totally. How would you say, just with your other fun appearances, which I've actually been fortunate to see, such as on Power Rangers and even The Practice.
Oh my God, Power Rangers.
Yeah, it's all on Hulu for anyone who wants to see. But and yes, I've seen some of your other B-movie work. But how would you say that these casting calls work now, since they're no longer just, you know, Actors Access or, you know, Backstage Magazine? Now there's so many different ways to get a casting call, and much like a job interview, people have to realize, okay, I'm ready for this now, I can go out and try this. How has it changed a lot?
I don't know, because now the way I get my acting gigs is by the people that I know that I've worked with in the past, and somebody tells somebody else to contact me. Most of what I'm doing is producing. I don't do as much acting. I do still have an agent, and sometimes I do commercials. I did a Target commercial. I did a commercial for a pharmaceutical company. I've done a few others just recently, but I don't actually know the process. I would say, you know, do films at AFI. They're always fun. Backstage is always available, and now everything's online. It used to be that we had to physically send our pictures in. I came up in the days where you had, you know, you printed 250 headshots with your resume on the back. Oh yeah, and then you had to staple your resume on the back. Yes. And then you mailed them in a manila envelope with a cover letter to the casting director, and casting directors had to go through all the photos themselves. So all of that doesn't exist anymore, and everything's online. It's a click, submit, click, submit, click, submit.
Yeah.
So I would say join all the possible casting, everything, and submit to things that look interesting to you, things that you want to be part of. Don't submit to everything. Submit to what lights you up, what you're going to be passionate about being part of. Because then when you are part of it and you are passionate about it, it'll show in your work. And that is what I've always done.
That's such a eye-opener, because it does seem like so many just want to apply to everything, and then they realize they sink themselves by realizing, I don't want to do half of the stuff I've applied for now that I'm looking at it closer. So yeah, no, that's really cool. Just save yourself time, unless you're not serious about it at all.
Yeah.
Altogether, so you really have got hit home on how to just kind of be fearless, but how do other people just kind of, I don't want to say take shortcuts, just find that they got to get there, you know? How
there are no shortcuts. It is hard. You have to have an ego of steel. You cannot let no's affect you. The no has nothing to do with you. The yes has everything to do with you. The no has nothing to do with you. You cannot take them personally. If you do not get cast, who cares? You walk out of that audition like you didn't get it, and it doesn't matter. It only matters when you walk in the room and you give your performance. That is the only time it ever matters. If you wear those auditions on your sleeve, you will fail, and it will be painful. You cannot do that. I've gone on thousands upon thousands of auditions, and I've done less than 100 projects. And the projects that I've done, I love, and those are the ones that I talk about. The projects that I haven't done, whatever. They weren't there for me to do.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and somebody else gets to talk about them. And I'm happy for them. I am so glad that they get to have that wonderful experience. And I got to have my wonderful experiences on other projects.
Right.
We have to be happy for each other. This bullshit competition that people love to do in Hollywood doesn't serve anyone.
I'm with you on that. I did see there was some article. They were citing a SmartList interview with Bradley Cooper. He's being interviewed. And then he was just talking how he was at like an Oscar party and people who he admired were like saying inappropriate stuff to each other. Like, I hope you lose. And it was an eye opener for him because it's like, okay, wow. Some people just, after being this awesome persona and all these drinks, decide I'm going to be Mr. Unpleasant because it's all about me, me, me. So it's interesting having to kind of combat, like you say, like ego where it works versus ego where it doesn't work. And it just, you know,
right,
causes all this tension. Altogether, what do you recommend for people, like you say, just like having this iron heart, having
you just
all
gotta
this
put
extra
yourself
step.
Out there. Yeah. Okay. You just gotta put yourself out there.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.